Previous Sunday nights, we saw Jesus telling the disciples that he's going to be crucified and buried and rise again. He didn't call it crucified here. He said he'd be killed and rise the third day. But they didn't understand what he was saying. And as he made the way to Capernaum, we looked at this the last time. Verse 33, when he was in the house, he asked them, "What was it you disputed among yourselves on the road?" But they kept silent. For on the road they disputed among themselves who would be the greatest. And he sat down, called the 12 and said to them, "If anyone desires to be first, he shall be last of all and servant of all." And this is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. Well, the disciples arguing about who's to be the greatest. Now Jesus deals with this in a very serious fashion. Note the impressive. He sat down and called the 12. When a Jewish rabbi was teaching as a rabbi, when he's teaching as a master teaches his scholars, when he's making an important announcement, he had them to come and he sat down and taught them. So Jesus now was very serious with the 12. He sat down, he called them to himself, and he said to them, in effect, "You really want to be great? This is the way to true greatness." And he goes on to make a statement so revolutionary that the world nor the church has ever really grasped it. Those of us who have served in the military know the command about face. You're facing in one direction and are commanded to turn 180 degrees and face in the opposite direction. This is what this command of Jesus does for us. Listen, he says, if anyone would be first, he must be last of all and servant of all. This is the world turned upside down. With this word, our common measurements of importance and greatness don't count anymore. If a stranger were to come into Huntsville or to Madison County tomorrow and ask who were the leading citizens, they'd likely be told of some mayor, a judge, or chief executive officer of some company, or some philanthropist, or maybe a great surgeon, a military leader, maybe an outstanding coach or a star on a team. Perhaps told of some banker or even maybe of some religious leader at some church. But who would Jesus list as the leading citizens of Huntsville, of Madison County? In Jesus, all of our common measurements of importance and greatness are pronounced obsolete. With this statement, if anyone would be first, he must be last of all and servant of all, Jesus, in effect, halts the whole human parade and puts it into reverse. He, in effect, says about face, or again a military term, to the rear march. Go in the opposite direction. Now the last end is foremost. The servant leads the march, and all the pompous kings who ever reigned begin to bring up the rear. Think of the list of the truly great in our area that Jesus would make. Some of the people that we ordinarily would put on the list, Jesus might have there. But the majority of those on his list might well be those who usually considered to be nobodies, whose name have never been on any list except perhaps a telephone directory. Instead of the leading citizens being the president of the company, on Jesus' list, it might be the scrub woman who scrubs the floor in the president's office. One who was a servant of all. I've been trying to do something lately. I have trouble motivating myself to do anything creative anymore, but I've been trying to write down some memories. And one thing I've been working on, and you might find interesting to do, I've been working on a list. I haven't started to write about them yet, but a list of the most unforgettable people in my life. I've got about 20 people on that list in my mind. I haven't written any of it down. But the most unforgettable people in your life, other than family, think about it and make your list. Not right now, but when you get home. But some of these people I've talked about in preaching, you know, the first person on my list other than my family would be an old black woman. I'm not even sure of her last name. Close on the list would be a high school teacher. The people that I've known in the ministry, one man I remember so well on the list, he had very little, if any, education. He had difficulty speaking. He wanted a ministry. And he thought for a little while God had called him to preach. He couldn't talk much, so don't preach. But he found his ministry. He became an orderly in the hospital. And he went around with a scrub bucket, scrubbing the floors and the restrooms, emptying waste baskets, and ministering to hurting people. For many of the time, he engaged someone in conversation, had prayer with them, and told them about Jesus. On that list of mine, there are two alcoholics. Wonderful men, both of them. Not anybody really world known, except perhaps one doctor. Make your own list. But if Jesus came to make a list of the leading members in this church, what do you think it would look like? Perhaps our leading members don't hold any office, aren't members of any committee, do not sing in the choir or play the piano or preach from the pulpit. Perhaps our leading members are some quiet prayer warriors that we don't even really know their names, but they hold up the other leaders of the church in prayer and hold the church up before God. What does this word of Jesus do for our world? Huckett put it this way. He said, one way of putting this question about who is the greatest to ourselves is, are you living B.C. or A.D.? Are the standards of greatness which you accept those that for the most part prevailed before Christ came into the world with his insistence on a new measurement of service? Are you really living in some year of the Lord? How about you? How about me? Are we living with the standards that existed before Christ? Or have we grasped a little of what he said and are living on this side of Bethlehem and Easter? William Barclay said this, it was not that Jesus abolished ambition. Rather, he recreated ambition. For the ambition to rule, he substituted the ambition to serve. For the ambition to have things done for us, he substituted the ambition to do things for others. What's your greatest desire? To rule or to serve? To have things done for you or to do things for others? He went on to say, so far from being an impossible idealistic view, this is a view of the soundest common sense. The really great people, the people who are remembered as having made a real contribution to life, are the people who said to themselves, not how can I use the state and society to further my own prestige and my own personal ambitions, but rather who said, how can I use my personal gifts and talents to serve others? Think about it. I'd be quite surprised if anyone here recognized the name of Nicholas Harmon. He was born in France some 400 years ago. He described himself as a great awkward fellow who broke everything. You've seen people like that. He became a soldier and was injured and remained lame for the rest of his life. Leaving the army, he became a rather clumsy footman. At 40 years of age, he entered a monastery and for 40 years worked in the kitchen, scrubbing pots and pans and floors. He never made a name for himself. As Brother Lawrence, he did nothing more sensational than to walk with God about the monastery kitchen for 40 years. Yet the story of his example there and a few pages of conversation with a friend and a letter or two have helped others for over 300 years. And many of you have read, perhaps, the little book under his name entitled Practicing the Presence of God. And in some way have been touched by Brother Lawrence. I remember one thing offhand he said in those writings, so brief. He said he counted it all joy when he could pick up a straw from the ground for the love of God. Did everything for the love of God. In the political realm in our day, I guess I tend to become cynical, but it seems that the first concern of our elected officials is to raise their own salary. And the second major concern is how to get people to forget what they have done and said and have failed to do that they may be reelected. But if I were to ask you tonight to mention that one politician that has had more impact upon this nation and was still most honored, I suspect many of you would mention the name Abraham Lincoln. Although he's been dead for over 135 years, his life still inspires us to serve others in humility and love. Popes and bishops come and go, and most are quickly forgotten. A person who's caught the world's attention will long be remembered as Mother Teresa. The reason for impact upon our lives is because she chose to become, in a very literal sense, a servant of all. The sickest of the sick, the weakest of the weak, the poorest of the poor, are the ones she sought to minister to. In her we see the words of Jesus in action. If anyone wishes to be first, he must be last of all. And the servant of all. William Barclay said, and I basically agree, every economic problem would be solved if men lived for what they could do for others and not for what they could get for themselves. Every political problem would be solved if the ambition of men was only to serve the state and not enhance their own prestige. The divisions and disputes which tear the church asunder would for the most part never occur if the only desire of the church and its office bearers were to serve and not to care in what position so long as the service was given. Jesus said he came not to be served but to serve and give his life a ransom for many. What are you here for? What is your ambition? Are you moving in such a way that if you listen, you might hear Jesus saying about face? I picked it up again. I read it several years ago. A book written by Dr. Paul Brand and Philip Yancey entitled In His Image. And I thought I'd close tonight by sharing with you a little bit from this writing. Dr. Brand writes about his mother, who was a missionary in India. At the age of 75, he writes, while working in the mountains of South India, my mother fell and broke her hip. She lay all night on the floor in pain until a workman found her the next morning. Four men carried her on a string and wood cot down the mountain path to the plains and put her in a jeep for an agonizing 150-mile ride over rutted roads. She'd made this trip before after a head-first fall of a horse on a rocky mountain path and already had experienced some paralysis below her knee. I soon schedule a visit, he said, to my mother's mud-walled home in the mountains in order to persuade her to retire. By then she could walk only with the aid of two bamboo canes taller than she was, planting the canes and lifting her legs high with each painful step to keep her paralyzed feet from dragging the ground. Yet she continued to travel on horseback and camp in the outlying villages in order to preach the gospel, to treat sicknesses, and to pull the decayed teeth of the villagers. I came with compelling arguments for her retirement. It was not safe for her to go on living alone in such a remote place with good help a day's journey away. With a faulty sense of balance and paralyzed legs, she presented a certain medical hazard. Already she had endured, listen to this, fractures of vertebrae and ribs, pressures on her spinal nerve roots, a brain concussion, a fractured femur, severe infection on her hand. Even the best people do sometimes retire when they reach their 70s, I said with a smile. Why not come to Vellore and live near us? And he called his mother Granny. That's what everybody called her. Granny, he said, threw off my arguments like so much nonsense and shot back a reprieve, a reprimand. Who would continue to do the work, she said. There's no one else in the entire mountain range to preach, to bind up wounds, to pull teeth. In any case, she concluded, what's the use of preserving my old body if it's not going to be used where God needs me? And so she stayed. 18 years later, at the age of 93, she reluctantly gave up sitting on her pony because she was falling off too frequently. Devoted Indian villagers began bearing her on a hammock from town to town. After 2 more years mission work, she finally died at age 95. She was buried at her request in a simple, well-used sheet laid in the ground. No coffin. She abhorred the notion of wasting precious wood on coffins. Also, she liked the symbol of returning her physical body to its original humus, even as her spirit was set free. Would you pray tonight? Lord, what would you have me to do? Will you do what he directs you to do? Then you'll know something of true greatness. Amen.